duh, duh, duh. Oh, dude, I actually hear it. Duh, 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 duh. Da 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 da.
Hello, hello, Mike.
You, what's up?
We are back after a week's hiatus. Wow. We are recording. Yeah,
sweet.
We're live.
Wait.
So I wanted you to read something off, please.
Insist on yourself. Never imitate your own gift. You can present every moment with the cumulative force of a whole life's cultivation. But of the adopted talent of another, you have only extemporaneous half possession. That which each can do best, none but his maker can teach him. No man yet knows what it is, nor can, till that person has exhibited it. Where is the master who could have taught Shakespeare? Where is the master who could have instructed Franklin, or Washington, or Bacon, or Newton? Every great man is a unique. Ralph Waldo Emerson. Self-reliance.
So, that little quote there, really glad you mentioned it, because
yeah.
It brings us to what I wanted to possibly dig into. Weird little concept. So, over the past like a month or so, I've been like kind of gripped by this idea. Would you stop shaking around?
Dude, sometimes I feel like I feel like Jim Carrey. Like,
how so?
My energy is all just all over the place sometimes. Like, I can't contain it in myself. Like, you ever see how Jim Carrey is like acting and all like goofy and everything? And one day he comes on TV and he's like, nothing matters. Like, did you see that?
Yeah, he flipped. Nobody
dude,
talks
exactly
about it
what
anymore.
I would do. Dude, that's exactly what I would do. That is exactly what I would do, dude.
Like, this, like, why is Ace Ventura on the TV right now giving me some, like, life lessons?
Oh, man. It's crazy. It's crazy, dude. Oh, man.
And then he dipped again, right? Just showed up. Dropped
dude,
some knowledge.
For real. Oh. It's amazing. Like, it's those little things. Yeah, they're cool.
So, Jim Carrey is probably a special kind of person.
Yeah.
Kind of person who's like super, super secure in himself.
Oh, yeah.
Like, knows who he is. And like, God bless him, because to know who you are after coming out of...
Dude.
God, after coming out of show business?
Yeah. Even in show business, it's like, it was to a great degree... It was like he maintained himself in a sense. I mean, you never know because, you know. But. You know, sometimes I feel like I'm like that in a sense. Like, I feel like I may just be an annoying person, like a really annoying person. Or I may just be so comfortable in myself that I just let my energy loose because I'm so comfortable in myself.
I think it's either of those two.
I don't know.
Well, you're definitely annoying, so like,
yeah.
But like for other people, it could definitely be true where they are confident in themselves.
Dude!
But I've had this thought for like the past month, right?
Yeah.
Just about consciousness. Just about, like, God, here we go. God, these words, hopefully they come to me. So consciousness, right? I'm thinking about it as, something that fundamentally can move across not two axes, right? Because they're not flat line. But consciousness itself, I feel like, lives within two states of being. And that's not quite it either. That's a little closer to what I want to get to. I'm gonna take my time with this one, though, and just... build this out slowly. This is the first I've sat down and thought about this, as opposed to just like letting it cross my mind. So consciousness, in my opinion, simultaneously exists in two ways. The first way is that it exists within existence, which is to say consciousness is within being. And I'm not getting any clearer with that. I'm really working at this. So consciousness Consciousness is real, as far as we can tell, because every person you or I come across has consciousness, right? That is one way in which consciousness exists in the day-to-day. More abstractly within existence, but, you know, we're just going to keep it to consciousness exists within the day-to-day existence that it perceives. But in addition to that, I think, and this is where I think a person's strength comes from, consciousness exists in another state, which is to itself. So it exists within existence or day-to-day life, and then it exists within itself. And the way I mean that is that's demonstrated by the potential for someone to conduct introspection. Simply the ability to look within yourself, to question your own motivations, and do that in a way, to be able to do that consciously, I think points to the fact that, or to me, points to the fact that consciousness, in addition to existing in the day-to-day, exists to itself. Now, I think where a person's strength comes from is the second one. Because in reality, consciousness exercises basically no control over existence, right? You know, it's why we have figures of speech like act of God, or the reason why we understand that we're unable to control certain aspects. I think you can wrap all of that up in a neat little bow and call it existence, at least relative to consciousness. The thing is, though, you have infinite control over consciousness. Consciousness has infinite control over itself relative to itself, in the sense of being able to change itself. Like, if we take change or effect in a meaningful way to stand in for having control over, and you could argue that, you know, consciousness can exert itself into reality, day-to-day life, but like fundamentally, no, you can't control what happens to you, sorry. You know, we've been struggling with that since we could think. but I think you can exercise maybe a little bit more control over existence if you become more... Because exercising control over your consciousness, there's also still levels to that, right? Like, there's levels to discipline, there's levels to forcing, you know. Like, anyone who's forced themselves to go on a run will tell you, like, there's levels to it, you know. You're not always in control over your own consciousness. But I think the higher you increase your control over yourself, and in addition to that, so increasing your control over yourself and also knowing who you are, right? Like doing the action, telling yourself to do an action and doing it. And in addition to that, looking inward and at your being and becoming more certain of that. I think that's how, and that's not easy, as anyone who's failed to go on a run will tell you. But if you do those two things, I think it increases an amount of energy and of control. I'm thinking.
Yeah, so you're saying, say that last part again in terms of those two things.
So the more you increase, so you break down exist, you break down being relative to consciousness into two. So being breaks down into consciousness and existence. In a way, and I'm not positive about this is the way reality is formatted, but I think for the discussion it works well enough, and it leaves very few things out, which I think is the key part. So you have existence and consciousness on an individual level, as far as the way someone perceives something. Consciousness is itself able to move relative to existence and relative to itself. But it doesn't control existence, really, even though it kind of can. And it kind of can. Right. Like, you can kind of make the world a better place if you're nice to people and you...
But you can't stop time.
But you can't stop time. I think that is the fundamental... I'm glad you brought that up because I think... I imagine consciousness as a sphere. Just conceptually, and it's not even remotely big enough, but a sphere existing in a wave, in an ocean. A four-dimensional hyper-ocean. You know? That flows... one way, because that's what time is. That's what I seriously like. What if us dying?
Yo, dude.
Like, last thing I'm gonna say real quick. I honestly, and this just struck me. I think us dying is us transcending time itself.
Oh, dude, that's like some Speed Force type shit. Like, you ever watch Flash? Like, you ever see like when he does like the Speed Force thing? And it's like, what you just explained is like, when he goes into the Speed Force, that's exactly what it is. It's like, a kind of like sphere. It's how you explain it exactly what it is. And it's like, dude, you like, okay, so when something's building up and building up and building up, right? The only end point, the only end build, the only pinnacle of building up is death. Because you could build up, where is it going? It has to die. So people can start all over again.
Yeah.
So we have to die in order to relive.
Yeah.
I think so when you die, you're passing to start over.
Yeah, you're just starting something new. Like, that's all death is, honestly.
So to be truly alive, you have to be able to die.
The Greeks had the saying, if you die before you die, then you won't die when you die.
Yeah. Because I have mourned some people before they actually died.
Yes, and it's crazy that we're able to do that, right? Well, I mean, what that is, based on listening to, honestly, relationship podcast dude Dan Savage, Savage Lovecast, highly recommend to anyone
love kid
who wants to learn how to
get into love
that and have a good relationship, but love. mostly the love. He brought up this idea of a child and a spouse experience the death of the dying spouse / parent differently. So say someone's mom is dying, right, and is a wife. The child of that mom will experience their death very differently than the husband of the wife will experience the death. Because when someone begins to die, like, they are no longer the same person. So I'm going to borrow a concept of Jordan Peterson's, which is a map of meaning, which is essentially it boils down to building your world around you containing several fixed points, like fixed point. You know who your wife is, and you plan a future, and you have a past. But when one of those fixed points falls through, you don't know where you are anymore. Even though physically you're in the hospital, you know that. But you also, the fixed point that was the thing in your map, your point of reference almost, fell through.
Yeah.
And I think that's also what defines a person's consciousness, is, and also truth,
yeah,
is fixed points of consciousness pointing to the same direction. And I mentioned at the beginning this idea of, I imagine consciousness as a sphere in a four-dimensional hyper-ocean traveling in one direction through time. I think, now imagine in, you know, abstract, 360 degrees of movement within that infinite ocean, right? Now, imagine as well other spheres, points of consciousness also existing. Now, the thing is, when you're looking out, unless you trust a person, that sphere of consciousness can deceive you about where it is. And I think that's another thing. Now, I think that deceiving, so you're looking out and it's almost like you're looking at a blurred image, and the sphere, instead of being one place, could be in this like sphere, like this range of places, and you don't know. Now, I think the person who builds themselves through introspection and action being fueled by discipline, if you can introspect and perform action based on your introspection, your action guided by the feeling of meaning, which I think if we spent some time on, a lot of people would resonate with. If you as your point of consciousness, pursue action that is driven by the feeling of meaning, and you notice that it's making the world a better place, I think your sphere, you yourself, condense. Because in addition to the way people see you as a blurred image, because they don't trust you, they don't know who you are, all of those linguistic things, that's what that is. You don't know, what is this? What is this blurred image? I kind of know, but it's not crystal clear. I think that also exists within yourself. Because you have to learn who you are. Because you don't know. You don't know what you're capable of, what you can do, what happens when you experience failure.
Dude!
But if you crystallize, it's almost a foundational point, right? So firm ground provides more stability than mart, right?
Dude, right? That is so true.
But this is what you're doing. It's not abstract. Like, the language is, you're not literally a sphere floating in a hyperocean moving in unidirectionally through time, and once you die, you stop moving unidirectionally, and then you can move in time in both directions. That's four dimensions. But that's what happens. Like, for example, someone gets up every day, eats the food they need to, does the exercise they need to, goes to work, applies themselves meaningfully, they crystallize, they become less indistinct, and become, they constrict to, they form, they gain form, they gain solid form, they become solid and more solid and more solid and more solid. Right? But that's what I think, that's how you build strength.
Yeah. So it's the one that really struck me was from what you were saying is that when you see other people and you see like an unknown image or sphere to a degree, that is like when you come into the world and you're you. But you're also an unknown degree or sphere. But because you're in you, you could be deceived that you understand what you are. That was what I got. That was what blew me away. So it was
that's
like
when, true. When I didn't even think about that.
Right. But that's what came out when you're going through this conscious stream.
Well, that's totally true. Because yes.
Right. So when you see others, or when you see the image and the blur of others, when you come into the world in you, you're also an unknown image and blur to you. The part of yourself that sees others as an unknown remains constant when you come into the world and see yourself, because you're also an unknown. So the part that sees the unknown and the known is a universal. The part that sees the unknown and the knowns is a collective, is part of the collective unconscious. So the collective unconscious is alive.
It's the collective unconscious is the ocean in which we're swimming.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. So the collective unconscious is the ocean in which we're swimming. And then when we see, and then the individuals, the human beings or the life forms are the illusory, are the images and the different spheres and blobs of
matter, flesh, right? and bone, emotions.
Right. So the collective unconscious is going into these different blurbs and spheres. But when you come into one...
When you solidify, you mean?
When you come into one of those spheres, right?
Mm-hmm.
You become unconscious of the fact that that sphere is a stranger. Just as much as you see others as strangers. Dude, that's crazy, right?
Because you're not really you. Like, if the Hindus are correct, dude. And I think they are, in a sense. Like, if Hinduism and Hinduism, I think, that, like, you exist within a net of points of consciousness that's really just a god diffusing themselves.
Right. Yeah.
You become unconscious to the fact that you are as much a stranger to that point of so you're the ocean that's mistaken itself for the drops.
Yeah. Dude, what? Everybody said this. Richard Dawkins said this, right? In The Selfish Gene. They explained it differently, but he said it like, and Richard Dawkins said in The Selfish Gene, the human beings are like just vessels for a selfish gene expressing itself in different forms. That's basically the idea. I'm oversimplifying, but that's basically the idea. And Carl Jung, because Jordan Peterson often said Carl Jung and Richard Dawkins were saying the same thing. Carl Jung says the collective unconscious, or the archetypes, really, is the idea. The archetypes is...
Which, now let's explain this a little bit more. Yeah. So Carl Jung, for anyone who doesn't know, one of the founders of modern psychology, a genius, had this idea of the collective unconscious. Now, the collective unconscious is essentially something that all humans tap into. Like the
speed force.
Yeah, so in the metaphor, if you are a point of consciousness in a hyper ocean, the hyper ocean itself is the collective unconscious, right? That you are steeped in. That everything is steeped in.
Yeah.
And then in the collective unconscious itself, there are certain archetypes or relatively fixed points that manifest themselves repeatedly over time in the same way that we should look to for meaning and guidance in a sense, right?
Yeah.
So now you were talking about a specific archetype, I think?
Yeah. So the idea of the archetypes is that their behavioral patterns,
right,
to which human beings expressively fall into in community and society. Now, this is gonna be heavy. Now, those patterns come from a universal psyche. Those patterns come from a universal psyche. That's a question, by the way. Those patterns come from a universal psyche. With a collective unconscious connecting each psyche.
So it's
each individual psyche.
So each individual psyche. Well, this is very Jungian to recognize this point, which is that just as the collective unconscious can influence the conscious through archetype, each individual psyche has an impact on the collective unconsciousness itself.
Yeah, because...
Like, that's fundamental in his ideas, because I know he talks about, like, no physician, in his words, but no therapist can effectively change a patient unless they are willing to be changed themselves. So unconsciousness and consciousness, or the collective unconsciousness, would have to have that relationship with individual conscious psyches.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, were you talking about the archetypes in reference to...
So I was talking about the archetypes in reference to the selfish gene. Richard Dawkins' idea.
Okay.
And I'm basically just talking from a point of grasping at the ideas, but the really strong ideas and really the really strong points of the ideas. And really the basic idea, like you said, was like in the Buddhism or Hinduism Hinduism belief.
Hinduism, I mean, technically, isn't religion ideology?
Yeah, really, but I don't want to, you know. But it's like... It's going to be a lot of work trying to connect Richard Dawkins and Carl Jung, but they do connect. But...
Well, it seems like at a very high level, they were speaking to... Essentially, Richard Dawkins, in other language, was speaking to the concept of archetypes.
Yeah.
Which Carl Jung kind of defined.
Yeah.
I mean, it gets more specific than that.
Right,
by a long
right,
shot, but
right.
Like, in general.
Because it's like coming from possibly concrete scientific standpoint to more psychological standpoint. But you do see the connection. It's like Richard Dawkins is saying the selfish gene expressing itself throughout history through different forms of behavior and actions from life forms and existences. The collective unconscious, Carl Jung, is expressing itself through the archetypes, and the archetypes expressing itself through the many behavioral patterns of human beings throughout history. And
so they're both onto something.
Yeah.
Because it seems, and like we'd have to go on like a much deeper dive into archetypes, but
yeah,
or like that concept. And
I have to get that book.
Yeah, there's so much I have to read. Question. Oh no, I think I might have lost it. No.
No.
So I was going to ask you what you thought about a specific idea, and it had to do with, think life and death. I'm not sure. Possibly religion.
Right.
But it's so totally gone.
Right.
So I did have, I've been listening to a lot of Jordan Peterson. He has a lecture series that's only partially released, for a book he wrote called Maps of Meaning, which I think I mentioned a little bit earlier, but he was talking, and I had a stray thought the other day I wanted your thoughts on. So it appeared to me that in general, in any particular instance,
right,
to overcome the resistance to do any task, right? Like, say if you're resistant, like, I don't want to go for a run. I don't want to vacuum. I don't want to call my mom. I don't want to do X thing that's good for me. Is to answer the call of adventure. And I think it's living the hero story, but in microcosm. And I was questioning if, like, perhaps, like, the map of meaning is... And this is based on listening to 7 parts of a lecture series and not reading the book, so what do I know? But I was wondering if, like, that might be the map of meaning, might be how you navigate that. But what do you think of that? Is that, you know, to do any small task is a micro example of the hero story itself, which is to hear the call of adventure, initially resist it, but then to go out and pursue it.
Totally, dude. Because it's like, so the call to adventure is always going to be there, I think, because I just think we don't know everything yet, and we haven't figured out everything that there is to completely figure out. And I think there's still a whole galaxy and a whole universe to explore, really, in the self and outside the self. And
absolutely,
you know. And so the call to adventure is always there. It's always present. It's ever present. The call to adventure is ever present in each and every single human being. And overcoming that resistance to the call to adventure. Overcoming that resistance to the call to adventure would have to be the hero's story.
You think it could not be any other thing?
I do think it could be something else. Overcoming the resistance to the call to adventure.
Yeah.
I do think it could be something else. Because then we would have to break down what it would mean to be a hero. And we could say it is that, but then doing that might not necessarily make you the hero as thought of as is generally. But overcoming the resistance to the call to adventure, it could go so deep to the point of putting yourself in a position where you do not move forward, because moving forward would mean the disablement of others.
How so?
So it's like putting yourself in a position, if you find yourself in a position where if you move forward, others will fall.
Interesting.
So then
that's more three-dimensional.
Right. So then resisting the call to adventure would be a heroic act.
Interesting.
You know, it's like it's my own Taoist way of saying, are you going to go right and kill the three young boys, or are you going to go left and kill the dad with his child?
I don't know if that specifically relates.
Well, I might be lost. Right, yeah. So look at this, right? Okay. So overcoming the resistance to the call to the adventure. Mm-hmm. Now that was an extreme example, but mm-hmm. So this is what it is, right? Overcoming the call to the resistance of overcoming the resistance to the call of adventure, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
So resisting adventure in the sense, or let me put it this way, resisting moving forward could be an heroic act.
Yep.
Because in the case of you don't want to drive left or drive right because you don't want to kill anybody.
Mm.
Resisting moving forward.
Right.
Would be a heroic act.
It'd be the only heroic thing you could do.
Right. So then.
Interesting.
Right. So God. Then. Mm-hmm. So then. Sometimes not doing anything is the heroic act. But then what would be the precondition for knowing when not to do anything?
That's.
So then, to become the hero, the precondition for heroism is wisdom.
Yeah.
So then, the hero is the wise one.
Interesting.
Because then, apparently...
Wisdom is almost forethought.
Right. So then, that goes to the inner world. Because that's where wisdom exists, in a sense. It exists in the inner parts. And so then,
do you think that might be one part of the strength that a person who is sure of themselves exhibits? Is like, it's a measure of their wisdom almost?
Right. So look at this, right? So then we're now seeing that the inner world is a precondition for the act of heroism in the outer world. So then, overcoming the resistance to the call of adventure in the inner world is the act of heroism before it even gets to the outside. So then, being brave enough to be introspective.
Yes, yes. Being introspective sucks. It sucks.
Right, so being brave enough to be able to think right then and there, that's where the hero is. Because wisdom will be the precondition for becoming a hero. And wisdom...
So the adventure
is inside.
Yes.
So the adventure is inside.
Yes. Interesting.
The true adventure is... So the adventure is inside. Yeah. Yeah.
So... Okay. So... The hero story, which is the... starting in one place, hearing the call to adventure, initially resisting it, then heeding it, and then leaving the one place, doing the adventure, and then returning. Now, this is a critical part of the hero story, by the way, that I think is very profound, is the returning home different. Home is either different, or ideally home is the same, but you're different, and then home changes as a result of you. But that's...
I think that would be it.
That's... So if we extrapolate that or extend that to consciousness itself, then it would be the... recognizing there's something about yourself that might need to change. Just even, like, gaining a glimpse on the horizon. Right? You don't see it, but you see the... There's a word. You see the You see a reflection of it. So, like, if you see, like, clouds, you don't see a storm, but you know there is a storm there. If you hear lightning, you don't know there's lightning, but you can see that it's there. So similar to that. So you gain a sense of its existing. And then as a result of that, you either would pursue the adventure. You know, you would pursue the introspection. Honestly, the what would it be? It would be diving into parts of yourself as a stranger, almost, because you'd have to look at yourself as if you didn't know yourself. But it's very easy to think that you know yourself if you are yourself, but you're just a stranger to your own consciousness fundamentally, you know. And that's if you buy. And I mean, as far as I'm concerned, I'm building the foundations to my own belief system literally right now. Like, there's no reason why I can't believe what I'm saying, right? Like, it could just be, we're starting a cult.
Yeah, so, yeah, so, it's like, recognizing that there is a part of yourself that needs to change, and going on to be brave enough to embrace that change is the act of heroism.
Yes.
Is, yeah.
It's so,
recognizing that there is a part of yourself that needs to change and going on to change that is the act of heroism.
Because that's not, like, so I realized something the other day. I like, went back and it kind of came to me in a flash, like a, and I, like, realized some unpleasant experience in childhood was, like, explaining why I had, like, one weird habit, right? I was like, oh, this makes sense. Now that I know the reason for this, let me just not do this weird thing anymore.
Right, yeah.
And I just don't, and we'll see if I'm successful at that. So yeah. Far, yes. But, like, it struck me in the moment. It struck me in the moment that not everyone can, maybe not everyone is able to do that. Like, to recognize why they do something in a flash of introspection and then, like, stop doing it, like, for the betterment of themselves, you know? And, because, I don't know, because, like, and I think, you know what, actually, what probably is the main reason I can do that, or at least a main reason, maybe part of it is just personality or genetics or whatever. But I also have a remarkably comfortable life, so it's probably not, like, super valid. But I think having a better quality of life allows you to be a better person, you know? Because if you have more, if you're not worried about being hungry all the time, then
you can go feed others.
Yeah. Yeah, that. I wish more people understood that.
Yeah.
It's so unfortunate. Because, like, can you imagine if every Christian lived like Jesus?
I know.
Can you imagine?
I feel like that's what he was trying to, like, point.
And,
like,
Jesus was on mushrooms, by the way. By the way. Like, let's get this out of the way.
Really? I didn't even know that.
No, I don't know if that's a fact, okay. But probably. The immortality key. Don't know the author's name, Brian Moresca or something, and I'm going to fact check that in a sec. But basically, dude goes on, like, a science hunt for whether or not there was an ancient tradition of using psychedelics in ancient Greece and in the beginnings of Christianity. And I'm not through the book yet. I'll update this as soon as I am. But I'm pretty sure the answers he found suggest yeah. So, like, no wonder Jesus was preaching love if he was on mushrooms.
Right.
Like, but I mean that, let me clarify that. Let me clarify that statement. Mushrooms have become associated with a stereotype of hippies.
Right.
Not what hippies really were, but a stereotype of what they were. A meme, if you will. A meme of hippies. But if this dude's correct and the science he found is correct, and I'm pretty sure it is because it's science, but I'll let you know after the book, There's hard evidence that points to a multi-millennia tradition of using psychedelic mushrooms, psychedelic fungus, to experience God. Experience God. So anyone, I don't know if you ever had this experience, but so you ever attend church?
Well, it depends on what you consider church, but in the longest, no.
Okay. So say a person attends church, right? It's like they get up, get to church by 10 o'clock, Sunday morning, you know. Dude stands up there and talks at you for an hour. If you're Jewish and it's a Saturday morning, 3 hours in right. Hebrew.
Yeah.
And, you know, you don't really experience anything. You're probably just bored because it's boring.
I used to sleep a lot.
Yeah. So alternatively, people of a certain age, they just give you some mushrooms and you experience God's infinite love among people you trust.
I wonder what it would be like having sex on mushrooms.
It's amazing. Apparently, they actually make you horny. According to Joe Rogan, I trust him on that. mushrooms make you horny. Which is, there's it's a theory. There's called stoned ape theory. And this would be crazy if this were true, that not only is there a multi-millennial, but maybe a tradition on the order of eons, hundreds of thousands of years, potentially, of the reason for Homo sapien, the leading up to the brain. Let me rephrase that. There was a period in Homo sapiens development over like several, I don't know the time period, but their brain size doubled under what is considered an evolutionary relatively rapid period, is my understanding. And there's a thought that as the ages changed and plains overtook where there were forests, our monkey ancestors would have to climb down from the trees. And there's a theory that they, while foraging for food, they may have discovered psilocybin mushrooms under, you know, wild cow patties and eaten them. And it's still psilocybin. That's all you do with a mushroom is you just eat it. That's it. There's no special. And then from there, like, your vision becomes more acute, apparently. They're tripping balls. They're experiencing things that they literally don't have the language to describe, because I don't think language was a thing, probably, if this theory is correct. But if the theory is correct, then it points to how many tens of thousands of years tradition of... And there's also some thought that cave paintings are themselves drawings done by shamans, indicating their psychic journeys, like, you know, 12,000, 13,000 years ago, that, like, there was a culture that had developed to that point, which is wacky. And it's just been stamped out. Like, if this is real, and this dude seems to have his science straight, and who knows for real, but, like...
Right.
Like, I do fundamentally believe that if everyone who would benefit from taking psychedelics took psychedelics, life would probably improve. And I clarify that very strictly. If everyone who would benefit, and who knows how you would go about deciding this, but let's just talk in abstract. If everyone who could take psychedelics and benefit from them took them, and I think there's a lot of science coming out proving that psychedelics are, that some people can benefit from psychedelics. And if the answer is greater than zero, people can benefit from taking psychedelics, you know, then that should be made available to those who can benefit from it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's where the science is now, is it's proving that. But we're only rediscovering that if this book is correct. Because, God, before Christianity, there was a 2,000-year religion with no name that we have, that was in ancient Greece, where people would... experienced psychedelic trips, and it's wild because it just forgotten, but like it was there for 2,000 years, probably experienced all the, probably resulted in experiences that gave us our experience. That's where Plato went there, Sophocles went there, up to like the early Roman Empire. It was Mecca. It was bigger than Mecca. Well, I mean, not numbers wise, but it was Mecca before Mecca, because Islam hadn't been invented yet. And the book kind of seems to posit that all of our offshoots are from this religion, you know, this belief that, but it wasn't a belief. That was the thing. It was experiential. Because if you take mushrooms, there's no two ways about it. You know, you're in for a trip. You've purchased the ticket. And the bars are down and you're heading up the hill. About to jump down that roller coaster. I don't know where I was going with that. That was just a rant on a book I'm very, very excited to be reading. And I think... Because the I know why I'm so excited, I think. Because it's what if it's true, but it's not true for the world yet? That's what I'm thinking. Because the science seems to be sound.
I would have to read the opposite side.
Okay. So, that's fair. From my understanding, based on, like, a person who, like, has similar ideas about slightly different things, like, he said the best argument that was ever levied against him was that he had taken psychedelics 30 years after the fact. But that is correct. That is what you would have to... But that's science. That's science. So it's exciting to read this. Who knows if in 30 years... Because imagine if that's true.
Right.
Like, that happened. That was a thing, and... It appeared to shape our world as we know it. An interesting thought that came back to me, thank goodness, was in America, there's this divide that the book pointed out to me, interestingly enough, whether we're Christian or whether we're Greek. Because you look at Washington, D.C.,
right,
and it's Athens in its day, which is crazy because Athens...
And now I'm Descartes. Descartes got kicked out. France.
Descartes?
Descartes. I said Descartes. No, exactly. Yeah, Descartes.
What did he get kicked out of France for?
Well, he didn't kick out, he just ran. But it was a cool story. It was an immigrant story. Yeah.
Did he come to America?
No, it was, I think he, so, France, he was born in France, right?
Yeah.
He got chased.
So for those of you who don't know, we're talking about Descartes, who's the founder of skepticism. He was the one who discovered "I think, therefore I am."
Yeah, so cool.
Yeah,
so cool. But
and he realized that was the only thing you could truly know, and then you have to start from there. And he was still a religious nut.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
he's God.
But yeah, so I think he ran from France to like Italy or something. I don't know. But I don't know the specifics, but keep talking, yeah.
Okay. But like, people today, it appears, think that we're a Christian nation.
Yeah.
But we're, all of our...
John Prison.
Everything.
John Prison stands behind that, though.
I think if he knew this, I wonder what he would think of this.
Yeah.
Because if this is true, and this is fundamental to everything, I would wonder what he would think of it.
He's a very scientific guy, too.
He is. Hopefully, because people brush this off. Because of the way that psychedelics have been codified.
Yeah.
So the idea of America is, we have all of our fundamentals are from Greece. But Christianity, like, what do we get from Christianity? Morality, arguably, but I feel like the Greeks did a lot of that.
I would say though that Christianity does have a power over most people than they would realize.
But that's worth exploring, because like that, if that is true objectively, so I guess why?
I still think that even if they figured out that it was psychedelics pre-Christianity,
and then into the early days as well. Right. That's the theory is that the original Eucharist was psychedelic in nature.
Right. What's the Eucharist?
So the Eucharist in Christianity is the body and blood of Christ.
Okay, okay, yeah.
So like how Catholics will eat like...
Right.
Yeah, the wafer and the wine, whatever.
Yeah, so I...
And the wine would also have been spiked and psychedelic.
Yeah. So this is what I think, right? Mm. I do think that even if it was psychedelics pre-Christianity or pre any religion, it was just psychedelics, I don't think people would care that much. I don't think they would care that much. I think... Even if they found out, oh, this was the Holy Grail, I still think that it would be just as much abused or used as well as everything, every other thing.
Yeah, I think another thing that has really drawn me to this, if I'm being perfectly honest, is like this, I'm wondering if this is the Holy Grail. But then you bring up an even better point of, is there a Holy Grail? Because, like, is suffering eternal? Yes. And it was for the Greeks, too. But I'm wondering, like, if we blend psychedelics with what the technology we have and the resources at our disposal, could there be a redistribution, a true redistribution, and a true, you know, instead of fighting about... Like, are two people who both took mushrooms going to be fighting about, I don't know, how woke they are, or whether or not they're gay, or, abortion's really sticky still, but, you know, there's a great many things I feel like it would eliminate, and then I'm wondering, does suffering and chaos just pervade in a different way?
Okay, so, at bottom, this was the thing I think Dostoevsky pointed out, that if we were given everything, and everything was satisfied, and everything was good, and everything was chill.
Yes, and if they had nothing to do but content themselves with, they were to lay in warm pools all day and had nothing to do but eat cake and busy themselves with the continuation of the species, that within a week they would demolish the utopia. Just
did you actually read that out from what he said?
I've heard Jordan Peterson say it a couple times.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is.
Yeah.
So I'm not too hopeful.
Well, I am, because somebody's got to be.
That's
perfectly reasonable.
Yeah.
I mean, I think for sure it would. I would imagine it would increase the quality of life I experience. I would hope. I would be hopeful.
Yeah. Well. They probably thought civilization was gonna help everybody, but it didn't. So it didn't help me. Maybe a little bit, but you just don't know.
Yeah.
Like, I just I would not be as hopeful.
But I'm so fucking privileged.
No, but me too. Like,
yeah.
Like nobody gets like podcasts, you know? Like, you know what I'm saying? So me too. Without that, like. But it's like, it's like everything external would always be subject to the thing that is internal, and what is internal is that is being, and being is a problem, and that's just the base of it.
Yeah. Yeah, I jotted down a question. How does the Greeks being on shrooms change things? And not really.
Well, it led to us. So, you like think about
maybe
it, right?
We
so
can moderately. Well, we're definitely like decreasing stuff. Well, I mean, quality of life is trending upward.
Yeah.
Hopefully it's not teetering on an imminent collapse, because that'd be unfortunate, but...
Yeah. I mean, the president has coronavirus now, so...
You said it.
Yeah, so...
He does, as of... When did we find out? Yesterday?
Yeah.
This is going to go up today anyway, but...
Yeah.
He does, which makes 2020 the most interesting year ever.
Yeah. Not 1939? 1914?
No. Most interesting of my lifetime.
Not 2001?
What was 2001 specifically?
September.
Oh. No, this is probably... Well, think about it this way. Right. September 11th.
Yeah.
Resulted in the Patriot Act. By the way, I don't know if you've ever heard somebody mention this, but there's now... I've seen this on calendar. On calendars, Patriot Day, right? Patriot Day on September 11th to commemorate the Patriot Act, where we lost all our privacy? Okay. Like, that's okay. Like, I get it. It was September 11th. You know, it was September 11th. But also, like, Patriot Day for the Patriot Act, you're not even going to try. So, I think this is the single largest, since then, constriction of civil liberties, because the government can now tell you can't open your business and you should stay in your house. That's not going away. It's not, I mean, hopefully, but like things, it's a one-way vice. Once it clicks, it doesn't open further. It, you know, and this is not to be conspiratorial, but like the Patriot Act is still a thing. You know, like, Snowden torpedoed his life so that we could know that.
Dude, you know, one of the reasons why I tend to avoid conspiracy theories is because, without even realizing what conspiracy theories were, I was already a conspiracy theorist.
Right.
So it's like, I'm like a natural-born revolutionary. Like, it's like,
there's people like that, because you know, there have to be.
Like, I was made, like, if anything, I was made to, like, just go against the grain. You know? And it's like, I look at Snowden, and he doesn't come up to me as somebody who's taking his time to go and lie.
No.
So it's like...
No.
I'm not gonna really get involved, but it's like, I know... We're
he's
like,
not lying.
I can feel like where it goes towards, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So it's like...
So we're just about at an hour. That seems like an interesting note to leave it on.
Yeah, let me read something.
We're going to end it on Just As We Began with some Ralph Waldo Emerson.
The Scipionism of Scipio is precisely that part he could not borrow. Shakespeare will never be made by the study of Shakespeare. Do that which is assigned you. And you cannot hope too much or dare too much. There is at this moment for you an utterance brave and grand as that of the colossal chief of Phidias, or Thrall of the Egyptians, or the pen of Moses, or Dante, but different from all these. Not possibly will the soul all rich, all eloquent, with thousand cloven tongue, deign to repeat itself. But if you can hear what these patriarchs say, surely you can reply to them in the same pitch of voice. For the ear and the tongue are two organs of one nature. Abide in the simple and noble regions of thy life. Obey thy heart, and thou shalt reproduce the full world again.
Thank you.
Yeah, that was fine.
Thanks for your time, guys. Take it easy.
Yee!